Coming up in mid-August, City Winery Lounge is going to host The Parlor of Stars, a summer residency with Grant Lee Phillips, and he joins me now in the studio. Hi.
Hey, how you doing?
It's nice to see you, Grant. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you,
and
too.
And it was fun to go through your catalog of music, your solo work, and the Grant Lee Buffalo catalog, which
right.
is interesting. It was. I looked at sort of, when I matched up the sound and the years, I realized what had gone wrong in my life.
Really?
because okay. through high school and half of college, that sound was like my thing. I was all about REM and the pop kind, you know, kind of a organic pop with some psychedelic overtones.
Right.
And but by the time y'all were doing your thing, I'd gone completely off on my traditional folk and bluegrass
right.
kind of
you
jag.
Were working your way backwards, yeah. which is a great way to do it.
And but I recognized in your music from that era, you know, a sound that I would then later on kind of, you know, in essence, has sort of studied the history of kind of alt country. You know, I love like Lone Justice and the Blasters, somewhat
right.
the same year. And I
yeah.
kind of wondered if you, given that you've kind of pursued this more of Americana roots and country kind of pursuit as a solo artist, did you feel like Grant Lee Buffalo had something to do with that universe?
I think there is a bit of that. Yeah. I mean, some of the bands you mentioned there, they had already sort of made a name for themselves in Los Angeles when I arrived. Yeah, I moved.
And X.
X, for instance, yeah. I mean, I grew up in Northern California in Stockton, but I moved to L.A. in 83. And at that point, you know, you could go see bands like X or, you know, Dave Alvin would be playing some club, and I would hear those bands. There was that kind of movement of the, you know, sort of the... the rockabilly punk sort of convergence,
yeah.
And then there were other folks like Dwight Yoakam that were coming up at that same point, you know. And I go see guys like him at the Palomino, and I felt a kinship with that. I think it's because I kind of grew up around a lot of country music, mm-hmm. and I thought that's exciting, you know, real music, you know, being played with some urgency and some sweat, mm-hmm. you know, some vitality. Now, I think there are traces of that in Grant Lee Buffalo. Bands that I played in prior to that might have been a little more psychedelic or something like that. Mm-hmm. But you mentioned REM. I mean, they were really great at kind of weaving together some of those traditional strains, instrumentation, and just great song structure and harmony, and
yeah.
and yet doing something with that, you know, that was unique to them.
And I guess Michael Stipe was a fan of y'all's, huh?
Yeah.
He went on record.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, they went a long way to spread the word, took us out on the road, and yeah, you know, and those records made a real impression on me as well, their albums, you know, both before and after that, you know, I got to know them.
Talk about your transition to solo artist, and you're still in L.A., and what
right.
were you facing, and what did you want to do?
Well, I think I'm always kind of being led by the writer part of what I do,
yeah.
and that part of me gets me in trouble, I suppose. It makes me, itch to try new things and go out on a limb sometimes. And after making the four albums with Grant Lee Buffalo, the first were essentially the same trio that we started the band with, and I kind of felt like, well, little by little, this was evolving. The shape of it was changing, and by the time I got to the year 99, it seemed, you know, like I needed to go off and do this on my own. I had been the writer in the band and the front person, and so it just made sense at that point. We were really kind of operating as a myself, drummer, you know. That's kind of what the band was, and then we had other folks that would come and join us on the road at that point.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the dynamic had shifted quite a bit at that point. And the first thing I went out of the gate and did was release a record that was entirely recorded in my friend John Bryan's basement. He said, here's the keys, have at it for a week.
mm-hmm.
And I released that myself through the internet, you know. And I mean, that particular time felt like, you know, it was anyone's guess what the music industry would look like. You know, in another year from then or further on. And
right. Well, popular music and radio by 99, 2000 was just pretty awful. I mean, it was as corporatized as it ever got. The internet hadn't helped the audience began to go, there's a place to look for my own stuff. And yet, and it was the end of the Record Store era, and it was kind of a really odd time. But I mean, there was lame music and on Top 40 radio, and there wasn't a lot of opportunity for, you know, except for maybe the last vestiges of college radio for an artist like yourself, I'd say.
Right.
Americana was just getting going.
Yeah.
What did you face in that respect?
Well, you know, I mean, I can think back to my my big dreams of just making a record, the idea of just making a record, and that was a lot. I looked at people like Billy Bragg and others that were doing these great records, and I thought, man, if I could just do that. And then we wound up getting signed by Slash, you know, and then Slash had this kind of arrangement, a relationship with Warner Brothers and Reprise, and things, you know, I mean, fortunate for us, they took off. But by the time we did that last album, Jubilee, with Grantley Buffalo, the pressure was immense, you know, to we were made very aware of all of these new terms, you know, chart related terms and, you know, placements and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And I think that really kind of, it's kind of spooked me in a way. I felt like, this doesn't have as much to do with making music, you know, it's somebody's job, but it probably isn't mine.
Well said, right on.
So, you know, I think that was it. Just trying to like get back in touch with that part of me that, you know, that likes to make music for the sake of making music. So that's what it was all about. I've sang with Rounder a couple of years.
Yeah,
after that.
That's pretty great.
And I'm really, you know, I'm very proud of those records.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a proud company to get aligned with and to have the sort of imprimatur of, because the history is obviously there, and they know talent when they hear it. And did you wind up kind of hitting the festival Americana, you know, what kind of we would call the eclectic roots festival circuit?
I think
in those early 2000s?
Yeah, right. I came out here in early 2000s and attended the Americana Fest, and I had been to Nashville a time or two before with Grantley Buffalo, maybe only once, but I really began to fall in love with the place at that time. And,
right.
And we began kind of thinking, my wife and I, like, wow, we could really live here.
Yeah.
You know, it would take 10 years from that point before we made the move, but I liked the community, and I liked the idea that there was this convergence of tradition and kind of, you know, and then kind of pushing the edges as well, you know, that it was pretty wide open. But largely driven by songwriting.
Right.
You know?
Right. Yeah, you seem to definitely embrace the, you know, the magnificence of language in your writing. You have lines that pop out that are really nicely shaped and poetic, but not self-consciously. They really, there's some really lovely writing in your writing.
Oh, well, thank you.
I'm enjoying getting to know that.
I try to keep my ears peeled for, you know, the poetry that is there before us, you know, in our conversation, you know, in life, and just try to steal some of that, inject that into the work, you know.
Do you have something of a method as a songwriter?
I probably have a number of methods, I guess, if you want to call it that, and it shifts from time to time. Just when I think I've found the perfect skeleton key, you know, I've got to try something else, you know, another way into the building. You know, you got to break a window. You got to get in some other way. Mm-hmm. Those seem to be the terms of songwriting. You know, that it's ever shifting.
Did Nashville's writer community talk about your first, you know, months here and beginning to be aware of how you could take advantage and get to know and network and enjoy and befriend? I guess might be an even better word.
Yeah.
Network around here.
Yeah, you know, I have met folks. I do a lot of traveling still. I tour quite a bit in Europe as well.
Okay.
So sometimes I feel like, you know, my hometown is B&A. That's where I run into people more than than any place, really.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, I and some of those people are going to be on this residency that I'm doing, the Parlor of Stars. Kevin Gordon, for instance.
Right.
Andrew Combs. These are folks that I met here. In Nashville and some of the other Wild Ponies and meanwhile they're it's just a serendipitous thing that Robin Hitchcock, who I had known from my travels and through, you know, when Robin would come to LA, we'd always get together. When I was in London, we'd get together.
Great. Yeah.
So that was a natural thing as well, that he's not a next door neighbor, but he's a neighbor, and that we could all come together and do this kind of thing.
Fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah, but I love it that there are, you know, that you are just within, you know, spitting distance of so many incredible writers and players.
Do you co-write?
I do. Yeah, I've been open to that more and more. It's something that I haven't really employed with my own material, and I'm just beginning to kind of experience what that's like as well. You know, I think that's probably kind of just a maturity type of thing. You know, to feel not so to not be so protective, I guess, of the process. That I might be willing, you know, to let a little bit in that way.
I always love to talk to songwriters who do travel and tour and write and consistently put out material, because there's all these, you know, it's easy to forget how many actual, you know, months and years of the professional dedication and grind have gone into, you know, to you sitting here now and these shows are going to come up. And yeah. What would you say has been the most challenging, most sort of trial-like things that just kept you saying, even because, you know, everybody knows the music business was even harder in the 2000s in the post-internet age than before. It's hard work. And why do you keep with it? You.
What do I keep at it? Yeah. I think it's, there's always a song and then there's another song. And those things are what really drive me. You know, I feel like I can do this album. I got one more. And I've said that just about every album, wow. You know, for 14 albums or whatever it's been that I've been involved with in my lifetime, every one of them, I kind of went into it thinking, okay, this is the first one. It's probably the last. This is the second one, probably the last. Maybe that's good though, to kind of feel like you've given everything you can give. But then there's another batch that creeps along and I feel like, okay, I have to deliver this.
Mm-hmm.
I've been given this message. I mean, it's not as, you know, as cosmic as that, but it's something like that where you feel like you have something to share, whether people are asking for it or not.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel like it's like blue collar work? Do you feel like kinship with the American working person who goes out there?
Well, I mean, I think it has its place, you know? Yeah. I think it has its worth, you know, like everything else. Yeah, most certainly. I mean, I've done those kinds of jobs where I was a roofer for 10 years and it was a good time to write songs as well. You know, hammering songs. They've got a certain tempo.
Could you do it? I need you to shingle faster. Like, no, that's not the tempo of this song, man.
That's right.
Yeah, this is a slower one.
That's why all my songs are a certain tempo, you know?
Roofing nail
they
tempo.
They don't move too fast.
Speaking of language, your 2018 album, most recent, is Widdershins, which I just loved looking up. I was like, this is a word, isn't it? They didn't make this up. And so it is a counterclockwise approach to something, and it has roots in like the devil. I mean, there's some
A lot of superstition concerning the idea of moving in the opposite direction of the sun, you know, or counterclockwise.
Yeah.
I mean, it's one of those constructs, really. You know, I mean, what's moving around what? You know, but I was. I don't know what attracted me to the word. I have a song called "Walk in Circles." You know. Having to do with walking in circles with witches, kind of feeling I might just align myself with, you know, those who are being misunderstood and, you know, the persecuted. And not that I personally feel persecuted, but it speaks to these kind of times where everything seems as though it's been turned upside down. It's all topsy-turvy and up is down and all of that, you know, Widdershins. And just a great word.
Yeah.
And I was working with Tucker Martine, who mixed the record, and I ran it past him. I said, "What do you think about Widdershins?" He goes, "I don't know. What does that mean?" And I explained it, and he goes, "Well, it's a great word." And you know, so
it's cool to reclaim a word. It's an archaic word, but you've, like, you know, you find an old word lying around and then say, "Here."
I'm always trying to look for those things, old words, old titles, you know, all of those kinds of things that are, I think it's like a treasure hunt sometimes.
Right. Well, you mentioned some of the guests you'll be bringing to the City Winery, Robin Hitchcock being one of the fellows on the 14th, along with Don Landis and Andrew Combs. Before we dive into the whole gang, tell me what inspired this residency and what your vision is.
Well, the idea was to find a way to play here in Nashville, which I just don't play in Nashville enough. I come through, it's my hometown now, yeah. And yet, you know, I come through maybe once a year, play a show. Josh Rouse and I had a great night at City Winery a couple months ago. And that's always fun. I do a lot of touring in that fashion these days, where I found it makes it more fun for me and for the audience as well, if I can kind of buddy up, you know, go out on the road, share the driving, and share the experience. And so this was sort of like that. What if, you know, what if we could bring some of that and kind of expand upon it? I've done similar types of things before when I lived in L.A. at a club called Largo. And Largo has become kind of the clubhouse for the Watkins Family Hour and so many great musicians. There's a lot of back and forth, you know, kind of an underground tunnel between Nashville and Largo, I think. But, you know, I love that rapport that develops naturally between musicians and the off-the-cuff interplay. And I like to kind of bring that, you know, that experience, have that same experience here.
Is this a first?
It's the first residency that I've done here in Nashville.
All right.
And, yeah, it's been some time since I've done that type of thing back in L.A.
Dawn Landis interests me. She's a sort of sophisticated, she's an understated artist. You have to spend a little time. Talk about why she appeals to you.
Oh, goodness. You know, I heard her play for the first time in Glasgow. It was a couple of years ago at a big music festival, and I was just really taken with her voice and her presentation and, you know, her sense of humor. Mm-hmm. We just hit it off well. And again, the next thing I know, she had moved to Nashville.
Yeah.
And so we reconnected in that way. And she's also on Yep Rock, as I am.
Ah.
And she was one of the first people that I thought about giving a ring. I think we're going to go out and do some other shows if we can, the two of us this year, working on that.
Mm-hmm.
I like to mix it up. And you're right, she has a great subtlety and a real... I think she has an appreciation for the kind of music that I associate Nashville with, you know, growing up, being a child of the 60s.
Yeah.
You know, those kind of, the Glenn Campbells and
all
of that stuff.
Countrypolitan kind of feel. There's a suaveness and pop sensibility,
right.
Classic.
Christofferson and, you know, I mean, goodness.
Right. And Andrew Combs will be here too. Well, this is a lot of talent on one night. This is cool.
Yeah.
And talk about how you arrange this and make this kind of go down.
I looked in my phone and I said, like, who do I need to give a call to? You know, people that I've stayed in touch with that I've co-written with Andrew. And that's kind of how I met Andrew through his publisher some years ago.
Yeah.
And I was just really struck with his talent and his voice and his sensibilities. He's a painter, you know. He's
really?
A great painter.
No.
he won't be painting that I know of during the residency.
Is everybody there all together kind of jamming away, taking turns on songs, or will the artists kind of take their own spell?
I want to let folks have as opposed to the round situation where everyone sits in a circle, I want to give each artist you know, their own little block, you know. So they'll play a handful of songs. You'll hear three by Andrew, and then I'll play a couple more, and then Robin will play and that type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
It starts at 7 o'clock, but it's a full, you know, it's a full meal.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Wild Ponies coming up on the 21st. Love them. Absolutely. I was with Doug last weekend hanging out. I seen a show. And what have you loved about Doug and Talisha?
Oh, goodness. They have just this really great loose thing that they do. And the harmonies are nice and sweet and tight, you know, but, I've seen them on a few occasions. I met them through Steve Poltz, who had done a residency over there. And Steve and I had got to be pals. We've toured a lot together. And I thought, man, these guys are great. And I've appeared on one of their shows. So we've developed kind of a nice appreciation there. And I think they're going to bring a nice, interesting kind of flavor to the show.
And they have, in fact, cut the same songs in some cases as utterly modern pop with beats and texture and ambience, and then they did that barn record in Virginia with just play into a couple mics with the crickets chirping in the background.
Right.
Equally compelling in both settings. They're just great. Kevin Gordon, you mentioned, he's a stalwart of Nashville, a man of letters and great accomplishment, and a sublime talent. I love Kevin Gordon.
One of his CDs gets in my, you know, in the car just as it come out, it becomes lodged in there for a long, long time. Yeah. Yeah, really rich songwriter and a storyteller. And I'm always trying to coax him out to do something, you know. I bug him every once in a while. And I think he's game for this one.
All right. On the 28th, if somebody I don't know yet, Jared Dickinson, and maybe the rest of the calendar is still fleshing in.
Max and Daniel of a band called Wild Eyes are on that final show. Great, great band. Their other member, Emily's off on the road. Mm-hmm. Will Kimbrough, I think you mentioned theirs on that final night.
Will, yeah.
Jared Dickinson toured with me. He tours a lot in Europe. He is a Texan from the Waco region, okay. And I think our only mustachioed performer of the series. Nice big bushy mustache.
And they're back. By next year, if you do it again, there could be mustaches there. Doug might have one. Jeez,
well, I think you're supposed to trim them in the fall, and and that's how it works. Otherwise, you get problems.
Great, Grantley.
Thank you, Craig.
Thank you, man.